And as Sammy Goose Megatoon have said to Luke Maverick Browning, watch the birdie. Welcome back to Motorsport 101.
Oh, well played. Well played. Well played. I didn't even ask for that. That just happened. Welcome to episode 596 of Motorsport 101. I'm your friendly neighborhood host, Trey Harrison. And I almost forgot that Sammy Megatoon did an Aerolon roll in the middle of a Formula 2 feature race.
Everybody's fine. And there was not even the most embarrassing accident of that Formula 2 sprint.
Somehow, a guy did a full-on Aerolon roll, and that wasn't the most embarrassing thing in that race. Formula 2 driving standards, everybody. But welcome to our doubleheader here on Motorsport 101. Glad you could join us once again. We've got two very interesting race weekends to talk about. We've got Formula 1 in Austria and MotoGP at Assen, the centennial anniversary of the Assen TT for MotoGP. That'll be next on the bill. You'll get both of these by the end of the meeting. The end of the weekend, I should say. It is a busy one after all, but yeah, we've got an Austrian Grand Prix to review right now here on, in Formula One circles as McLaren's beefing in a friendly, non-toxic, generally well-received manner. It was good. And Lando Norris won, which is good for the championship battle. We like that, etc. Lando Norris taking the win over Oscar Piastri. Charles Leclerc back on the podium in third for Ferrari. And we'll be talking all about that. Is it the end of Max Verstappen's world championship reign? Probably. Is it the end of Max Verstappen at Red Bull, period? We'll have to talk about that a little bit because that story has exploded in popularity in the last 48 hours or so by the time this goes out. It's a weird one. We'll talk about that. Sauber, they had a fantastic weekend. Alpine, not so much. And we'll talk a little bit about the F1 movie as well, because RJ insisted he wanted to talk about the F1 movie like everybody else has done in the last week or so, because it's interesting stuff. RJ, how you doing, big man?
We'll get to the question of, is this the end of Max Verstappen's title hopes? But this is only the start of Max Verstappen's reign as a winning, class-leading GT3 team owner. And also, Lamborghini finally won the Spa 24 Hours. That happened.
Yay! Good for them.
I think Andrea Antonelli, Italian GT Championship legend, let's not forget, wanted to make sure that Verstappen got to see his team take the checkered flag. So he gave him some time off.
Apparently, after his DNF, he didn't even bother watching the rest of the race. He was watching the Spa 24 to see how his team was doing. A part of me appreciates the sicko that resides in Max Verstappen. A small part of me respects it, certainly. Also joining us is also a fellow sports car nerd, Cameron Buckley. How's it going, sir?
Yes, personally thrilled to have racked up 3 second places and no wins in the month of June as a Porsche fan.
Now you know how it feels for the rest of us.
Hey, Ferrari would be delighted with second places, at least in the Formula One side of the equation. Yes. Also, I have a microphone.
Yes,
a dedicated one. Used a little bit of a coupon and bought myself a Rode NT Plus to work, and it's nice.
I'm still rocking the AT 2020 back from the days of yesteryear.
It's nice. My desk is now completely overwhelmed, even though I have the smaller of the MacBook Pros, and this microphone isn't that big, which of course means now I need to remodel my entire room to actually have room for a desk.
You know what this means, Cameron?
Hmm?
In the style of Hagrid from Harry Potter, you're a podcaster now, Cameron.
Great. I've become the very thing I swore to destroy.
One of us. Oh, yeah. He's joined the club now. Like, the man at one point basically paid him to sleep on a couch and talk about sports cars is now a full-blown, over 350 appearance podcast member on this show, and now he actually has a microphone. Which, in case you're wondering how he sounded beforehand, yes, that was off his MacBook's built-in microphone. It's good shit. I can't even argue.
It's really good stuff. And I'm not saying that because redacted. It is actually good. But this, and basically I got this again through a coupon, it's a little nicer. I should sound a little bit more rich. As I bitch incessantly about just everything
you're
that happens.
You're the one person here sport. Of us that owns a Chevrolet Corvette. You are already sounding
and
rich.
I spent less on that car than I think anyone else's car here.
I don't Although, have a car. I live in West London.
That tells you how much the C4 was to buy. As a side note, the C4 is back up and running, and oh my god, it's so much fun.
He is the fanciest bitch imaginable right now. He takes a swig of his water bottle as well.
I'm not a real Corvette fan until I already have the gray New Balances, but I need some jorts.
Of course you do.
The jorts will complete the look, and then I'll just post on Facebook about how insert right wing issue here is the reason why I voted for Donald Trump.
For the second there, I thought when he talked about buying jorts, I thought it was going to go down the John Cena road. That took a turn I wasn't expecting.
Wimbledon guest of honor, John Cena, I'll have you know. Dre, tell...
That is enemy of the Ford Motor Company right after Ryan Eric King, John Cena to you.
Tell the people where they can find the podcast, besides motorsport101.com.
You could find the podcast in a heap of interesting places, youtube.com/motorsport101. Check out the shorts we're uploading on there as well now, if you're that way. Let me put up 6 whole minutes of RJ O'Connell talking about Robbie Kubica zoomed into a face. It's beautiful, if I do say so myself. We're on Twitter at motorsport_101. You can follow us on Instagram at motorsport101pod. I'm doing some extra highlights as well. You can follow me personally at DreHarrison101 on there. You can also follow me on Blue Sky at DreHarrison.bsky.social. It's the RJ O'Connell's his name there. Cameron Buckley, CBuckley917. And of course, you can also catch our video highlights on TikTok as well. M101_podcast. You can follow us on there and say hi if you're that way inclined. Of course, as RJ alluded to, our website, motorsport101.com, which contains written reviews of all of the episodes we have as well, including this past race, F1 in Austria, MotoGP at Assen, and Ask Dre, which will be out for the month of June as well, where I answer your listener questions. Thank you, everybody, for sending those in as usual. And of course, if you really like us, you can back us financially on Patreon, patreon.com/motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to all of our content. You can upgrade to the $10 tier so you can listen to these episodes live as they're being recorded, as Emma, Jason, Rory, Ghost Raptor, they are all doing some in the chat right now, you sickos. Thank you very much for listening in as ever. There also may be some outtakes from the show that may be going up exclusively on there very soon. Let's just say if you're into...
We all apologize in advance.
Let's just say... There were Pop-Tarts and cats involved. That's all I'll say for now. Enjoy that at your viewing displeasure. So right after this, we'll get into our Formula One Austrian Grand Prix review.
Got 3 words for you. Bottle that one. It was a heated race long battle of the Austrian Grand Prix between the McLarens at the head of the field. Lando Norris qualified on pole by half a second after Pierre Gasly spun in front of half of the field, leading them all to abort their final runs. But after Lando Norris ran wide early on in the race, Oscar Piastri was poised to attack, having a couple of near misses to pass. Lap 20, Oscar locked his tires up trying to lunge at Norris at turn 4, and Norris immediately botched a response. Piastri came out 6.5 seconds behind, while Piastri got the gap down to 1.2 for the back half of the race. It was not enough to beat Lando Norris in a McLaren 1-2 with Charles Leclerc distant 3rd, 4 Ferrari. What did you make of the lead fight? And more importantly, Is Lando Norris back in control of this?
I think rumors of his demise were always exaggerated, to be honest with you. Like, even the mistakes that Lando Norris has made over the course of this season, I've said it before and I'll say it again on this show. Before Canada, he had finished every Grand Prix in the top four so far this season. Yes, McLaren have had the best car most of the time in 2025 so far. But these weren't minor mistakes. These were not major mistakes. Even the one in Canada, he lost 12 points. Piastri lost 25 when he spun out in Austria. Like, relatively speaking, I think people were making a bit much out of Lando's mistakes. I think part of it was just narrative-driven. They liked the idea of Lando being the bottle merchant, so they wanted to hammer home that narrative. This is Lando's best track. He's always gone well in Austria. From the time he was a rookie, he loves this place. He qualified on pole by half a second. Again, bit of an asterisk there. A spin for Pierre Gasly denied the majority of the field a second run in qualifying, but I don't think anybody was doing a 103.9 anyway, to be honest with you. I think Norris was just on it when he needed to be this weekend, and he's always been capable of weekends like this. He just needs to do it a little bit more often. Not much, just a little bit. And he's there. He's in the window. He seems like he's a bit more comfortable with this car compared to at the start of the season. And I think he put together a fantastic weekend and a near flawless Grand Prix to the point where Oscar had to be perfect to match him. And for once, Oscar wasn't. It wasn't a scruffy weekend by the Australian, but I think it was just one that he wasn't quite at full song and he couldn't win as a result of that. And that's what it should be between these two. It's going to come down to weekends like that that determine who wins and who doesn't. And that's great for this championship. For all the shit we've given Lando about how his season's played out, he's only down 15 after 11 rounds. It's not that much of a deficit at all, really.
And to your point about this being his best track, remember 2020, the first race of the COVID season? He got his first podium in that him versus Verstappen time trial. Was it him? Who was he chasing that with? Was it Verstappen or
Hamilton? Hamilton.
It was Lewis.
It was Lewis after he executed
Alex Albon.
It was that time trial from Gran Turismo Sport. And the only time that he has finished outside the top seven at Austria was last year when he was fighting for the league and was classified 20th after crashing into Max Verstappen. That's what I was thinking of.
Yes, indeed.
It's quite good around this place. This was also the source of the very first Fernando Alonso, the first Lando Norris meme. You remember the one from his European F3 season where it's him just sitting sad in the gravel, but he's wrapped up the title by this point. Classic. So it's just like, it doesn't even matter.
That I didn't realize that gravel trap was Austria. I did not know that. That's I remember the meme, but I didn't remember what track it was from. That was a funny one when that dropped at the time. It was like planking as a meme format, just ahead of its time. It was great. But Cam, what did you make of that lead battle in the meantime?
Yeah, I mean, kind of echoing everything you said, I'll also say that such was McLaren's advantage here that those two really could afford to lean on each other a bit and still drive away from everybody. I mean, those two pitted an extra time. They were able to pull a pit stop gap over Charles, bolt on fresh mediums, and then do it all over again. And yeah, I mean, Lando has had scruffy weekends this year, but I think a lot of narrative power has been put behind Oscar not doing that, and he has. And again, I probably wouldn't classify this as scruffy from Oscar, but he wasn't able to put in the lap time necessary in qualifying due to situations outside of his control. But then Lando actually showed a bit of tact and a little bit of craftiness against him that I've been a little bit of critical of Lando for this season. He hasn't really shown up to this point. He was able to play DRS games with DRS being, God, half the lap here. With the first three straights all being DRS zones. To defend against Oscar the couple of times that he was able to get close enough. I would be concerned, however, with Lando that if this is his best track, Oscar shadowed him the whole way home.
Was the quicker man in the back half of the race as well. Now, a little bit of that is traffic, navigation, because Austria plays up that a lot because it's such a short lap around there. And yeah, like, Piastri was the quicker driver in the back half of that. Yes, the part of that was also the fact he had a tire delta advantage. I mean, part of this win for Lando, I think, is a very cool bit of strategy that I don't think has been talked about very much. Picture the scene. I mentioned it in the script. Lap 20, Oscar Piastri locks up hard going into turn four and, you know, tries to overtake Lando. Got a bit of a drubbing from the team wall saying, papaya rules, Oscar, you're not doing that again. Oscar flat spots his tires. Will Joseph, who is Lando Norris's race engineer, immediately calls Lando into the pits, knowing that Oscar's now going to be forced into running an extra lap, at least one extra lap, on flat-spotted tyres. So he's actually forced McLaren's hand using his car's track position.
And he's empowered Lando's undercut by doing that.
Exactly. And by doing that, he's now forced Stollard, who is Piastri's race engineer, into making a difficult decision, because he's now thrown it to Oscar, that radio message of basically, do you want 1.5 seconds in a straight fight, or do you want 4 seconds of a delta advantage? Piastri chose the delta advantage. They reckon it was going to be 4 seconds, but because Piastri had flat-spotted his tyres and unfortunately had a 3.4-second stop due to a poor stop.
Both stops from McLaren, a little bit sticky, over 3 seconds.
Yeah, 3 seconds for Lando, 3.4 for Piastri. And as a result of that slow stop, Piastri ended up 6.5 seconds behind when it was meant to be 4. And that probably made the difference. It denied us at least a final showdown between Norris and Piastri at the end of that race, because Piastri was the quicker man on the medium rubber, but he just had too much to do by the end of that race. And Lando never really looked like he was going to lose in the back half of that. But it was a genius bit of strategy from Will Joseph on the McLaren side, on that half of the McLaren pit wall, that partially helped towards Lando getting the win. It was really, really good stuff. And I wanted to give a shout out to Will Joseph on that side, because I think cool strategic moments like that deserve some flowers. And I thought that was a really clever bit of work from that side of the garage. Had to get that explainer in there because I just thought it was cool. Nerd!
Who are you calling a nerd, you nerd?
Well, we alluded to it earlier. Max Verstappen did not have a good weekend. He was denied his second qualifying run. He had a start in eight. You got up two positions by turn three before Kimi Antonelli locked up and speared him Braun Breaker style into the corner, ending his race. Verstappen's now 61 points behind Piastri in the standings. Red Bull as a whole team is not doing great. And I want to roll in two talking points in one, because George Russell admitted he hasn't been offered a new deal yet at Mercedes. His free agent at the end of the season. He even speculated the reason he'd been denied was because Toto Wolff is still in talks with Max Verstappen for the second year running. So I guess the first thing I want to ask is, and I know what the answer is going to be, is it over for Max Verstappen and Red Bull's championship reign at the top of Formula One?
We're going to recycle a quote from last week with Mark Marquez, only derogatory. See you in 2026.
Hey. I mean, you talk about guys who are good at this place. Verstappen's won here 5 times.
He's the all-time leader in pole positions, races won, and laps led at the Red Bull Ring. This would have been at least an opportunity. I mean, to be fair, I think Christian Horner was very sincere about Red Bull and his chances here this weekend, because they did bring an upgrade package this weekend. He reckons Max was on a lap that would have put him P3 in qualifying. Until, as mentioned, there was a yellow flag at the penultimate corner because Pierre Gasly spun out at turn 10. So
speaking of bad weekends,
yeah, more on that later.
Alpine as a whole.
Oh, cheeks. Max was denied the chance of being able to finish that up because he had to slow down for yellows. And then, well, his race lasted 25 seconds. So it was just an inconclusive weekend, really. Horner reckoned they had enough to finish third, but it wouldn't have been enough to challenge McLaren. And if that's the case, given how strong Max is here under normal circumstances, 61 points off Piastri when we're halfway through the year after the British Grand Prix this weekend. Pack it up and go home.
Kimi actually did ask a favor, by the way.
because Kimi, by running him over, Kimi actually ensured that Max could not get a penalty points ban. At least until he achieves a few more of those penalty points the way he's been driving this year.
The funny thing is that he's down to 9, but that 9 stays on his record until October because the next drop is off in the Mexican Grand Prix. So
there's still every chance.
There's still a chance.
Yeah, I mean, look, the balance of the Red Bull was not great here. And balance here is arguably even more important than raw car performance. And that ultimately is where Red Bull has been badly hamstrung the last really year and a half. They can get lap time out of it, but only Max. It's the 2019 Honda MotoGP bike. Mm-hmm. There's one dude who can get lap time out of it. And if he ain't there, or if it's not enough, they look really sour as a result. And a lot of could he pull this off hinged on what Red Bull could do with this car, because it started off not too bad. Was actively dominated around Imola with an upgrade package on the car. But it just seems like the operating window is so damn narrow with this car that you watch the McLarens following lap after lap after lap at 100%, and the tires just don't budge.
Christian Horner,
the Red Bull destroy its tires out in clean air because Max is having to fight the car to get lap time, to say nothing of Yuki Tsunoda. And let me tell you, the stock is down. The stock is at the bottom.
The stock is ironically lower than General Motors in 2009, which is, again, ironic considering that's where Yuki Tsunoda is currently being linked to for 2026.
I would love to see it.
Yeah.
It's they've gone the wrong way relative to McLaren. And when you throw in the fact that Max has been scruffy at times this year, the fact that he did get speared out of this race, impaled, asking, did Sephiroth do this? No, it was Kimi Antonelli. It's a bridge. Max could win out from here. He would still need a little bit of help.
Yes.
Unless McLaren forms a severe case of MP420-itis, I don't think it's happening.
Yeah, Christian Horner described that McLaren lead battle as Oscar, quote, making love to his fucking exhaust in the middle of that leading flight, which I did not need to hear from him for many, many reasons, but he was right.
An apt description, however.
Yeah, because that's what it was. They were fighting each other tooth and nail, and they were still pulling away from Ferrari at the same time. Like, by a good half a second instances.
Oscar was 5/6 tenths away the whole time, and his tires would not budge.
Yeah. It just did not matter. And Piastri ended up with flat-spotted mediums, ended up going 4 laps longer than Lando did. 24 laps in a 70-lap race on a set of medium tyres. And Austria is one of the bigger tyre wear venues that we generally go to. For me, it's Dunzo. It's not even Max can pull off the miracles. He needs help. He needs help. It's not coming from Red Bull. And even last year, Red Bull still won 3 Grand Prix after that initial stampede of 6 that Red Bull won when they still had the number one car on the grid. By the time we got to Imola and Miami, that real, that sliding doors moment people like to describe 2024 as, they only won 3 Grand Prix after that all season. And that's roughly the rate that Max is going at right now, where Red Bull are a fringe player that can clean up McLaren's mess, but only on very rare occasions. And as Cam quite rightly says, if the performance window of your car is that narrow, you're not going to win a championship that way. You need to be versatile.
Fine, it's fine. Look, we got Arvid Lindblad coming in for FP1. I promise you, one more second driver change will fix it. I promise you, bro. But what if the driver change isn't the second driver?
Well, Toto Wolff is about to offer up the entire GDP of Germany.
Well, for a bit of backstory, last year, Toto Wolff, according to Sky Sports, was prepared to put together a $135 million contract to sign Max Verstappen for 4 years. Like, he was, I mean, as Ryan King says, this is Mercedes-Benz, Daimler, Chrysler, fuck you money.
It ain't Daimler Chrysler, let me assure you that.
Close enough.
We speak not of those days.
It's Daimler, but it ain't Chrysler. That's Stellantis's problem. But yeah, they're rich.
But yes, it was a boatload of money to try and pull that off, and it didn't work out. Max still had a championship-winning car at that point, and Max didn't really have a good reason to leave. I still don't think he's got a particularly good reason to leave, but this talk is not going away. I personally think there's an angle in this that not many people have been prepared to talk about. George Russell just completely threw his boss under the bus.
Yep.
Like, George Russell, like, for all the shit we give him, is an excellent politician. He's now immediately pushed his own team boss in the path of a moving bus.
He wanted to be at 10 Downing Street today.
Oh, badly. He wanted to say hi to his fellow Tory, Keir Starmer. Anyway, the point I'm getting at here is that George has now forced Toto Wolff to admit that he's still talking to Max, because George is looking to get his own big money contract, because as mentioned, he's a free agent at the end of this season. He's not been paid yet, and George openly said, I don't think I've been offered a deal because Toto's talking to Max. And when Toto was asked about it during the Austrian weekend, he didn't exactly deny it.
It was a non-answer. Toto Wolff, again, you have to look at team bosses like politicians, and very few get more political than Toto. We haven't forgotten the 2021 radio battle between him and Horner every weekend when it was being broadcast to us.
Exactly.
What is concerning in all of that, again, is if the question going into this year is, can George Russell lead Mercedes? He has emphatically answered that question, yes. For my money, he's been the best driver in Formula One this year, top to bottom.
There's an argument. And
I think he has been right with Max, and I would say Charles, and then probably Oscar. Like, he has been fantastic. He also would be a completely impossible to pair Max Verstappen with. We know how those two get along with each other, well, which is to say they don't.
So, if you're George Russell, what kind of annual salary are you commanding if you, let's just say, hit the open market?
At least $20 million a year.
He's going to be the best free agent on the market.
And it's not even close.
One for one swap, Russell or Red Bull, Verstappen or Mercedes, who says no?
Good luck to Russell is what I would say.
Right.
Because there is a reason why Max might want to leave. And it's that, as it was about 11 years ago, every single source says Mercedes is going to have the engine to beat next year. And because it's going to be another engine formula, brand new engines, starting that development curve over again, you think Mercedes is going to give out the secrets to McLaren? They are going to hand McLaren that engine the day before preseason testing.
What I will say is, and I think Toto needs to understand the position that he's taken here with the public. You've basically just sent out a message that says, I don't think George Russell is good enough to win a championship. Because if you thought George Russell was good enough to win you a championship, you wouldn't be prepared to write a 9-figure check to try and bring in Max Verstappen. You're clearly still, to a degree, insecure about your driver lineup. And I say this is stupid because George Russell has ticked every single box you could possibly ask him to tick as a Formula One driver and as a Mercedes prospect since about 2017. He has been outstanding and exceptional in everything he has done in single-seater racing. GP3 champion, Formula 2 champion, was outstanding at Williams leading that team into the turbo hybrid era, has come into Mercedes and was immediately at Lewis Hamilton's level from the moment he walked through the door. There's nothing
more. Went 2-1 against Lewis head-to-head.
Like, there is nothing more that George Russell can do to prove himself. Yeah. He has proven it. He is now one of the elite drivers in Formula One, one of the four or five best drivers in the world. He can spearhead this team. And you've got Kimi Antonelli in reserve, who is still 18 years old and could be at Mercedes for 20 years.
Yeah, and they're not going to...
Here's the problem.
And Mercedes is not going to treat Andrea Antonelli the way that Williams treated Jenson Button 25 years ago.
Here's the problem. He's not Max Verstappen.
And to be fair, it wouldn't be the first time Toto Wolff's horribly mismanaged one of his juniors.
Yeah, remember?
No, it wouldn't.
It wouldn't be
but
the first...
We went through this exact same thing last year, really 2 years ago with MotoGP. The notion for a long time was with Ducati, well, we'll make it so we don't need Marc Marquez. And then they got Marc Marquez, and look what happened.
Yeah.
Heads, pikes, walls.
I think
if Mercedes does nail the engines next year and the car has been better to the point where they are starting to, it looks like what they're seeing in the wind tunnel is starting to talk on the track. If you throw Max into that equation, you could turn next year into a bloodbath even worse than it already would be.
The question
my question would be with Max would be, I don't know if he fits the Mercedes. I don't know if he has a long leash with Red Bull. A long leash. He is not going to get that at Mercedes, no matter how good he is.
And Mercedes likes their headline guy. Mercedes is going to have two headline guys because there's no way they're going to get rid of Russell. They'd be stupid to do that. And look, this is a lose-lose for Mercedes. You're either losing one of the best drivers in the world to bring in Max, who has already been at your established team now for 4 years and has been excellent in three of them, or you're losing a generational S-tier prospect you could have for 20 years. There's no good answer here. Unless you're 100% certain that you think Max Verstappen is going to take you over the top. Because anything less than that, and well, you could be looking at a situation similar to what Lewis Hamilton's going through at Ferrari right now.
Who had his best weekend in red and still got clapped.
Fourth is fourth. 12 points is 12 points. They don't take points off for how far you finish behind your teammate.
The way I see it, Max has to ask himself, how confident are you in this team going forward? How confident are you in your 2026 car, and what you personally know about it from an ICE standpoint, from a battery standpoint, from a regulational standpoint? Because Max still has 3 more years on his contract after this season ends up. He's signed up until 2028. There is a performance clause in there, but he'd have to be outside of the top four by Austria. That's what my colleague Stuart Coughlin reported at Autosport.
Which he wasn't, so that's just off the table immediately.
It is off the table.
He's third.
It would have to be ugly. They'd have to be a big old check to tell Max to leave, essentially.
Yeah.
So, and look, Christian Horner is many things. He is going to respect the wish of a driver who wants to leave. He's never stood in the way of someone who's wanted to leave the team. He never got in the way
of
Ricard.
He's never had a problem throwing out drivers who wanted to stay.
And to be fair, half of them weren't even his call. You know, it's the nature of that team and its driver management, which we all know is ropey at best. But when Vettel wanted to leave, Horner didn't get in the way, and Vettel's one of their greatest drivers. Daniel Ricciardo was the same in 2018. Like, Horner's not going to make it difficult. If someone doesn't want to be there, he'll let them go. I don't know if Verstappen's at that point where, let's say, for example, he's in a similar situation to where Lewis Hamilton was halfway through 2012. When you look at the super times, McLaren had the fastest car in Formula One that season, but the reliability was so bad and so frustrating that he had enough. He rolled the dice with Mercedes. Niki Lauda whispered in his ear that he felt like the hybrids that were coming a year and a half later on were going to run the field over. And he was right. And Hamilton bought into that vision. And we had the greatest car and driver partnership in Formula One history. I don't know what the Verstappen camp is thinking. And as Cam alluded to, that camp's got a lot of clout in that Red Bull camp they're not going to have if they walk away from it. That might also be worth something.
Yeah, it's...
I don't know.
Red Bull only have themselves to answer to. And they're an energy drink company. They do sports because it's cool.
And it's worth a lot of marketing money.
It's worth a lot of marketing money.
Billions.
There's a lot more corporate heads to answer to if you go over to Mercedes.
Yep.
There is a lot more, I would say, like, again, the extracurricular activities. Max's GT3 team. Conveniently, Mercedes happens to make a damn fine GT3 car. Not that you would know it from these past two 24-hour races. Past three, actually. Le Mans didn't go so good either. All the sim racing, all of the everything. Max can kind of do whatever he wants.
Yeah.
And famously at Mercedes, Lewis had a leash. Lewis could kind of do what he wanted, but not to that degree.
No. To be fair, the Mercedes idea of giving him a leash was not having him play the dress code and letting him bring Roscoe to Grand Prix paddocks. That was enough.
Hey, that's more than he got at McLaren.
True.
It's always more than you get at Ron Dennis's McLaren.
No, did the guy come by to wash our gravel?
No, clean it again.
Can't have dirty gravel.
It's fascinating to see how this is going to play out. Like,
I don't think he moves. I'll openly say
I don't think so. I don't think so either. And
I think he owes it to himself to at least give it a year with the new regulations and see where he's at the end of 26.
That's what I'm thinking. If he goes, it's not going to be until after 2026. But it is fascinating that the chatter is louder and harder to dismiss than it would have been 6 months ago, 9 months ago.
Also the small matter of this came out of Sky Italia, which means that Max is about to sign a lifetime deal for him and all of his future children with Red Bull. Such is their reliability.
Yeah, it's been reported by them and everybody else piggybacked off that. We are also sport. We openly said this is just smoke for the time being. I'm inclined to believe my colleagues. I haven't got a reason not to. Yeah. That's just me being fully transparent about the situation. There's no insider information I'm giving you here. We literally put it out there publicly that this is a non-story, while also putting Max in a Mercedes suit mock-up.
Hey, he's got that Adidas drip. Send him a pair of fresh Kobe 2s.
Less said about that, the better. I don't think he moves yet. I'm thoroughly of the belief where you go by the phrase "better the devil you know than the devil you don't," and I think he gives it at least one more year before making that decision. Because if nothing else, I think Toto Wolff looks at the idea of Max Verstappen as fishing in a Pokemon game and getting the Feebas. If you've played the Gen 3 games, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. The exceptionally hard-to-fish Feebas because it evolves into a Milotic. He's tried this for 2 years now, and he hasn't
tried
done
this a
it.
Decade ago.
Yeah, and I think, personally, he looks at Max like his golden goose.
Every team on this grid should be trying to sign Max Verstappen, because for all of the silly bitch that Max Verstappen is and has been and has the penalty points to prove it, he's still the best driver in the world.
He's the best driver in the world and one of the best of all time. without question, in my opinion. Any team worth its salt will be looking at the possibility. And even if they weren't, I think it's further than that for Toto. I think he wants to get one over on Christian Horner.
Of course he does.
I think it's...
hates that man.
It would be the biggest fuck you he could send to Christian Horner if he could turn around and say, I signed the guy that basically you made Galactus. Like, I'm your silver guy.
I signed the guy who you used to topple my empire.
I just thought of something. Laura Mecki should make an offer to sign Mats Verstappen. You said any team should try and sign Mats Verstappen. There's nothing, and you can't even frame it as a demotion either. It's just like, we're going to break the bank to drive for Red Bull's other team.
Hey, that car looked a damn sight better this weekend than the RB21 did at times.
Yeah. I personally still think a lot of this is all just stemming around George Russell trying to force the issue more than I think than this is actually a hardline story of, oh, they're talking. They're definitely talking. I think it's all off the back of what Russell had to say in Austria.
Pump the brakes there for a second. Mm. Rory in our chat saying Max Verstappen and Tim Goss design car. Give your money back. We're giving you your money back. Get out of here.
Rory didn't even pay for the subscription. A friend of his did. I should refund that bill, quite frankly.
Remember, patreon.com/broadsport101 for a $30 discount, 30% discount, you can sign up for a year.
Yeah.
We're just going to start shilling mid-podcast now.
Yep, indeed. We got some other stuff we want to get to here in a minute. We talked a little bit about Ferrari being okay. I mean, also I want to say a quick condolences to Fred Vasseur and family. He had to leave the weekend early. His mother has reportedly passed away over the course of the weekend, which is just horrible news to hear about. Our love and condolences to Fred Vasseur. We all love Fred here. One of the good ones in the paddock, and that must be heartbreaking to have that happen. Sending all my love to Fred and the fam, of course. An okay weekend, third and fourth. They're probably their best weekend of the year.
Without a doubt.
Indeed. And, you know, just a nice, quiet, lonely
third and fourth.
But you know what? Points are points, as RJ alluded to earlier. It's still third and fourth, and they still pay you the same regardless. So good for them.
Tell that to the people who are completing the podium in 1988.
Can I just move along quickly here and quickly say, in the last three Grand Prix, Red Bull has scored 19 points and Sauber has scored 20.
Gabriel Bortoleto is really good.
That was a stunning weekend.
The Sauber produced an upgrade that has actually worked.
It's like it's not a fluke. Like
it's now three races of like, hey, this Sauber ain't half bad.
It's scoring points. It's scored points three weekends in a row, 20 in total. We thought Hülkenberg's P5 in Spain was a fluke. It wasn't.
It was a moonshot. No, that's just kind of where the floor is now.
Bortoleto got 4 points for eighth place. Jason in the chat says Sauber had a 2 second pit stop. Dogs and cats are living together. Mass hysteria. Hülkenberg went from 20th to 9th on a soft medium.
Again.
Like, this team is cooking. 20 points in three rounds.
But what is the point? They're just ruining their own process.
You're ruining the wind
tunnel concessions.
But they might get like 20 or 30 million more in prize money if they can keep this up. Because if you look at the constructor standings now, they're only 1 point behind Aston Martin for eighth. And they're
damning indictment on Aston Martin, by the way.
I know. And they're only 3 points behind Haas for seventh. All of a sudden, Sauber could be looking at getting way off the bottom.
And Nico Hülkenberg leaves Haas, goes to Sauber, and it's an upgrade.
That man is...
What do you mean?
He's such a good driver. Hülkenberg is so good. I've been saying this for 3 years. Hülkenberg is so good.
He debuted 15 years ago.
God, I feel like...
Cyril booted this guy out of F1, said, no, we don't need you anymore.
ridiculous. That boy, nice. Gabriel Bortoletto,
That
was a stunning weekend.
If you had concerns that Gabriel Bortoletto was a system quarterback, a Mechachrome lottery merchant, crumple all of it up, throw it, string a garbage can yelling, Kobe!
Look, let's put it this way. First Q3 appearance he's ever made. 4 points for finishing eighth in the Sabo. Was actually gunning down his mentor, Fernando Alonso, with a couple of laps to go. Just ran out of time because Lando Norris had to come through to lap the pair of them in that final fight as they were going over the line. Fun joke. Apparently, Jonathan Wheatley at Sauber actually sent a text to Zach Brown saying, hey, mate, do you mind not lapping us? We're in the middle of something here. Zach wasn't at the Grand Prix weekend, so he was like, sorry, buddy, can't help you. which I thought was actually quite a funny joke there. But he was on the brink of passing Fernando Alonso, his mentor. And I love the little moment where Fernando was the first man to congratulate him after they parked up.
Yeah.
Gabriel, really the first proper graduate out of the FA14 management company. But well done
great,
for Gabriel.
Great. Low key as well. Great drive from Fernando Alonso as well.
Superb. He like Aston needed that. They needed that bad. And that was a nice little reminder that this team can put some shit together. Like, why is Lance Stroll so anonymous?
Because he's Lance Stroll. That's the most time we need to spend on him during this weekend. He was awful.
We're back at the bottom of the cycle, but it could.
He was awful.
It could always be worse, fellas.
Could be so,
you could be Alpine.
You could be Alpine.
And they weren't even the worst team this weekend because Williams had a rare DNS-DNF double combo.
I don't know, man. With the pace that Williams showed up to that point, I might take that kind of weekend over the kind that Alpine had.
Carlos Sainz Jr. had another iconic mechanical failure at Austria. Looking back at his burning car.
So let me get this straight. Carlos Sainz stalled his car on the formation lap.
No, it was not stalled. It was stuck in first gear.
They did finally get it going just as they were coming back around to finish the formation lap. They had to abort the start. They wheeled Sainz's car onto pit lane, and then the brakes caught fire.
Which then lit the rear wing on fire and burned it through, and then that was that.
Yeah, game over, Carlos, out the car. Spectacular. No notes. 10 out of 10.
It never goes well for him in Austria.
Like, you know,
Austria's last few years.
It's amazing. Carlos Sainz has had 4 DNSs in his career. 4. How is that possible? I find that...
That is a statistical anomaly. Like, that is a great Jeopardy question.
Yeah, like most drivers are lucky to get, or unlucky really, to get one in their career. I think Carlos Sainz has had 4 in his career, which is just such an outlier. It's ridiculous. Absolutely crazy. Alex Albon having another unfortunate weekend, had the same power unit issue that he was having in Canada. He had a double DNF. Alpine were cheeks. Good Lord. Gasly was looking extra strugglicious. Colo Pinto was taken out by Yuki Tsunoda and then nearly took Oscar Piastri out while being a back marker. Copped himself a nice 5-second time penalty for his trouble for putting Piastri on the grass.
What happened to the Franco Colo Pinto that showed up at Williams around like 9 or 10 months ago? It was making us ask serious questions about Alex Albon, who we know now, measure up against Carlos Sainz, is actually a really good driver. Where did that guy go?
I don't know. Like, it's a weird one. I don't think Colo Pinto's been dreadful since joining Alpine. I don't know how much of this is on Colo Pinto and how much of it is the team just being arse gravy right now.
Yeah.
But whatever it is, it ain't good. Colo Pinto has been confirmed he'll be staying beyond his 5-race initial trial for now at least, but there's already rumors that they might bring in Valtteri Bottas as an emergency signing.
Probably a Brands or getting cold feet. I already. Never would have guessed. This is the kind of solid leadership, maturity, and staying the course that you could only get with Flavio Briatore.
Special advisor Flavio Briatore. The man's giving out advice as to how not to run an F1 team as Alpine comfortably sits now by double digits at the bottom of the Constructors' Championship. Alpine might end up finishing this year bottom of the Constructors, which would be an unmitigated disaster given they were sixth last year.
Why were they sixth last year, Dre?
One jammy weekend.
Exactly. Like, their chassis department has been dick for the past 2 years.
Also,
remember when they had a legitimate, like, one of the better chassis on the grid in 22 and 23? Like, they're like 35 horsepower down. You put a real engine in that car, it might be cooking.
Yeah, like that.
It's awful.
That chassis bailed them out on numerous occasions over the course of those two seasons. And also, I love the fact the Raptor in their chats brought up the fact that Flavio was in attendance with UK Prime Minister Keir Starmer today as like a special 75th anniversary of the British Grand Prix F1 meetup, talking about how much F1 brings to the UK economy, which is hilarious given the UK is one of the only countries on the calendar whose government doesn't financially support its Grand Prix. I think the irony in that is hilarious.
I'm just thinking that, like, Keir Starmer walked up and saw Flavio, is just like, oh, hey, Nigel.
Yeah. Funny that.
I didn't funny that. Cancel.
I say, yeah. I'm now expecting my Amstaff Terrier to barrel through the door.
Yeah, yeah. Like, it's the lodger. It's Mr. Nobody in John Wick where he says nuts to his dog, and the next thing you know, they've been torn off. Kira in the chat saying, remember like 5 races ago when we were saying that Alpine might have their shit together and then Oaks resigned? Yeah. Yeah. It's not been good since.
Oliver Oaks.
Alpine are... It's like they're in a contest with themselves to find out just how hard you can mismanage a Formula One team.
Yeah, it's a
hot
mess.
On a Michael Jordan hot streak.
Hot ass mess of a team right now. Goodness me. RJ, I think you're the only one who's seen it.
No. Turn that down. We're splitting the difference at 7.5.
Yeah,
it's fine.
I wanted to talk about the F1 movie. Now, I openly admit, I have not seen this yet. I don't want to see it because I don't want to give Brad Pitt my money, quite frankly. But you did go out. You were invited to go see it. What did you make of it?
All right. So F1, the movie, came out last weekend. Box office success, first weekend, like, flew everything else out of the water, I'd say. My reactions when watching the movie while I was at Watkins Glen was that, in the immediate aftermath, I thought, okay, so there's like two tiers of racing movies. There's the good ones, there's the bad ones. I think we know which one Driven falls into. That's the bad one. Good ones, probably like Rush.
Man, you say that, and like Driven the movie is like the Godfather compared to Driven the video game.
Right.
We're not even talking about that. I thought on first watch that F1 the movie falls into the top half of racing films. Does this mean that this is a prestige film worthy of sweeping up everything at the Academy Awards outside of the audiovisual spectacle? No. There are a lot of things with the plot that...
Hollywood?
Yeah, it's Hollywood. A lot of this is. There. You see that even in like the very first sequence of the movie, a.k.a. the best sequence in the movie, a.k.a. when Sonny Hayes is running the Rolex 24 and drives from sixth to first in like a handful of laps at the start of what turns out to be an 8-lap stint. 8-hour stint, I should say. Now, a lot of that is played up for effect, but there are bits and details. Like, they just nailed it perfectly. They got Lee Diffie, all the IMSA broadcast graphics, the driver change look real, etc. That continues in the Formula One portions of the film where they get all the details right. It's a Jerry Bruckheimer-produced, Joseph Kosinski-directed feature, just like Top Gun Maverick. I was expecting the audiovisual elements to be good. The plot itself, again, as mentioned, it's a little bit silly. And I'm not even talking about the fact that Sonny Hayes is in his mid-50s coming back into Formula One and ends up being reasonably competitive. How competitive?
Mid-50s is generous here, by the way.
But they probably, like, de-age his character a bit in the
come on. I mean Fernando Alonso is definitely going to be competing into his mid 90s.
The more incredulous thing that I found out watching that film, small plot spoiler, in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, Ruben Cervantes was his teammate when Sonny Hayes had that life altering accident in Spain, which looks a lot like Brands Hatch in 1993. He didn't know that those injuries were so bad. He literally had the Martin Donnelly accident.
Right.
Martin Donnelly is in the credits as a thanks to for inspiring this.
Because the crash was that crash is what inspired the crash in the movie. Even I knew that going in. Which is wild.
He fires him for injuries.
Which even among racing crashes is not for the faint of heart.
Oh, yeah. It's a whopper. Good lord.
And this movie has like two sport enders in it. And the most anybody misses is Joshua Pierce sitting out a couple races before he's back in late. Strain mentioned, like, there are, like, if you have objections to the way the lead actors off-camera marriage ended, I don't blame you for not wanting to go out of your way to, like, go pay to see it. I'm saying that there are ways that you can watch it for free. You could get invited. Who's to say? There may be others. I don't know. Ask your parents. It is also, I would also be lying if I didn't say that this is one of the better racing movies. Like, I'd say rewatch value is, like, it's average. But it is admittedly one of the better racing films that we've had. I don't know if that's more of an indictment on the quality of racing films that we've had over the years that are not like true documentaries or what have you.
What do you mean a snail can't qualify for the Indy 500? Lotus got two cars in 2012.
There are other things I didn't like about it too. Like, I thought the whole angle of like Sonny Hayes and Kate McKenna becoming an item is like crazy. It's especially weird, champ, in light of things that are going on in other real life teams. And when I'm talking about like fantastical elements, Apex GP starts off as like the HRT Formula One team bad, and they want to win one of the last 9 races with the greatest upgrade package in Formula One history.
Yeah, it's. Like I said before, I've not watched this movie. I've had pretty deep synopses and reviews from people whose opinion I trust on this movie. And yeah, but RJ sums up a lot of how I've been told this movie is, that presentation-wise and visually, they do a fantastic job of portraying the high risk, the speed, and the presentation of the sport is brilliantly done.
It's playing the sport to beginners too. It's great.
Yeah, like Formula One, and again, I have to salute Formula One for how much access they gave these guys to be able to pull this off. If you didn't know any better, you would have thought they were actually a part of the grid. I salute them there. I've heard talk about, you know, does this pass the woman test?
The Bechdel test. No two women talk to each other at the same time, which is crazy. And
I know that's disappointed a lot of people. Yeah. I know the room is very split on that. Hell, I produced a James Allen F1 podcast, and there was literally a disagreement about that movie during the episode I just did between James himself and one of the journalists who was on there, Emily Selleck, who wrote a fantastic piece about women's influence in that film on motorsport.com. I highly recommend you go out of your way to read it, by the way. It is a very well-written piece on that situation that is worth your time. Carry on, RJ. Back for you.
If I had to give it a star rating, I'd say 3 out of 5. It's a solid 3 out of 5. Like,
sure.
Again, it clears the bar that is with the mantle of the earth that is driven. It's not Rush. It's not Grand Prix. There are elements where if you are a hardcore racing fan, you will just nitpick it to time eternal. I tried not to do that when I watched the film. There were still things that made me chuckle, like, oh man, we had two sport-ending crashes in this film. and all the other ways that some of the people interact with each other. And, you know, I can't say I didn't enjoy it. I can understand if it's not your cup of tea as a hardcore racing fan or as somebody that likes a bit more elevated films. Again, I'm not saying that this is like the greatest racing movie ever made, but it's kind of a miracle that this ever got made, because for years and years and years, we were always told they can never make a modern Formula One movie. It's just too expensive, and Formula One would never allow it to happen. And they allowed it to happen this time. Incredibly, this is also sparking rumors of a Days of Thunder sequel. So we're literally running the playbook.
Didn't Bruckheimer confirm that they're working on number two?
In the works.
And personally, it will break my heart to see the number 46 City Chevrolet livery on a next-gen NASCAR Cup car with the number in the wrong place. I don't care it's been 4 years. I'm not getting over it.
Yeah. You know, thanks for that review, RJ. I do appreciate that. Look, again, I salute F1 for having the ambition to even play along with this. The fact that F1 greenlit this, something that they've low-key kind of been working on for like 30 years. I remember the days when Sylvester Stallone wanted to try doing this.
Yeah.
And we ended up with Driven as a direct result. The fact that this movie has even made it to cinemas, the fact that it has generally been given positive reviews, it's certified fresh on Rotten Tomatoes, audience scores in the 90s, the fact it's done well is going to do a lot of good for a lot of people in and out of the paddock and for fans of the sport in general. From what I've been told, it does its job. It was not built for us podcasting nerds. It was built for people that are not Formula One fans. And that is where they should be aiming it, quite frankly. Because if they wanted to make an authentic Formula One movie, like most Formula One races, it'll be boring as shit. So the Hollywood gloss is probably only a good thing in the grand scheme of things. So
we found a way to combat turbulent air in big 2020s.
Yeah, and I look forward to an inevitable sequel led by Damson Idris, who did apparently a pretty good job as Joshua Pierce, and he can spearhead the sequel and you know, roll with it in that sense. So, you know, good for them. If it makes its money back, great job by all involved. I just hope you don't hire Brad Pitt next time round. We'll be back for another Formula One race. It's kind of a big one. It's only the British Grand Prix this weekend. One, arguably the blue ribbon F1 event on the calendar. 500,000 expected over the course of the weekend at Silverstone. It's going to be a sellout probably by the time this actually goes out. Just a small matter of Lando Norris potentially winning his home Grand Prix. That would go over well. He's got his own grandstand and everything. You know, we'll see how that plays out. Will Oscar Piastri get involved? Will anybody else interrupt that McLaren swan song at home? Maybe. Probably not, but we'll have to wait and see. We'll be back for that next week. We'll be back for our next MotoGP episode right after this on the Aston TT. Because if you thought the title race was over last week, oh boy. Until then, I've been Jay Harrison, they've been RJ O'Connell and Cam Barkley. Until next time, thank you very much for watching or listening, and we'll see you guys next time. Sayonara.
Later off.
Hey. No Comcast effect this week.
Mm.